Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
Welcome to show number 3 of the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together on that honey-do list. I'm Paul.
And I'm Brian.
And we're here to help you with that list to get things done around the house for you handy guys, for you handy ladies, whoever you are, those that are in charge of fixing things, maybe breaking things and fixing them again and restoring things and sprucing up the house. This show is for you. Before we get started, just wanted to provide some contact information. First of all, our website is www.handyguyspodcast.com. And if you'd like to submit a question or via email or online form or via phone call, you can leave us a message. The phone number is on the website. What's the number, Brian?
What's the number? Where did I put it? Here's the number. The number is 615, area code 676-0877. So call us at that number, and we may actually use your questions and comments as on the air, as they say, in an upcoming podcast. Again, that number is area code 615-676-0877.
Yeah, I was going to say, make sure you give us details of what your question is. Be as detailed as possible. Also, tell us your name and where you're from.
Yep.
Whether you do it via the online submission form or via the phone call. So we'd be glad to hear from you, and we'll use your question online. Hopefully, we'll get to it. All right, for this show, we are going to be talking about reciprocating saws. That's going to be our tool of the show, and we're going to review some reciprocating saws. But before we do that, we wanted to finish our segment from last time regarding paint. Particularly, we talked about edging tools, paint brushes, but we didn't yet talk about the tools that you use to get the walls painted, the big areas.
Right. We didn't talk about the rollers. So what are the things to consider with rollers? You've got quality of the rollers themselves. You've got foam rollers. You've got just the normal fuzzy kind of rollers. You've got, what else do you have? Wide rollers, narrow rollers.
All kinds of rollers. You got disposable rollers. You got rollers that are 3/8 inch snap, half inch snap.
Right. And then you've got the paint sticks. So you've got where you got the power rollers, things like that. So the paint stick is an interesting product that can hold about a quart of paint in the handle. And as you push on a lever or push on the handle, it squeezes out into the roller and onto the wall it goes. So where do we start? First, the typical roller, what is it? 9 inches, 9 inches wide. That's the typical paint tray size.
It's pretty simple, right? You put your paint in the tray, you dip the roller in a little bit, and you roll it on the wall, right?
That's right. That's pretty simple.
Now, some guys recommend that you roll it in a W pattern, and others say, no, just roll it vertically up and down.
The key there is, like I said in the first show, is keeping that wet edge. So you don't want to go all over the place. You want to move from left to right or right to left. If you go in a W, that's fine. If you go straight up and down, that's fine. Just you don't ever want one area to dry and then paint back over it, or you're going to get a line where you left off and started again.
I noticed that the rollers come in different sizes, widths, but also they have different naps, they're called. So it's usually has to do with how much that roller is padded. If it's the thickness of it, of the hairs on the roller are 3/8 inch or half inch. What's the difference?
Well, the heavier nap roller is going to hold more paint, but that's really not why it's designed that way. It's more designed for a textured wall. So you're going to use a really heavy nap if you're painting, let's say, stucco outside, or if you wanted to leave a little more texture on your wall. The standard for, you know, plaster and drywall walls is pretty much 3/8. Sometimes people use a half inch because it'll hold a little more paint, and the difference in the potential texture it leaves behind is not that great.
Right. Usually when you go from a half inch or greater, you're going to get more of a texture, an orange peel type texture or an eggshell type texture. You'll have a texture on the surface. And if you want a really smooth surface, you need to go with an 8-inch nap or less. Some of you out there that have plaster walls, if they've been maintained over the years with a good paint, you really are supposed to brush the paint on if you're a purist and you have plaster walls. And if you roll them, to use a really low nap, 3/8 inches or less. Now, if a previous owner has already used a heavier nap brush, you may already have
the texture.
The texture right on the walls. So it may not do you any good, but if the walls have been hand painted or painted with a low nap brush, they may be super smooth. Have you ever seen plaster
low
walls?
Low nap roller.
Oh, yeah, excuse me, a low nap roller, right? But if you've ever seen walls like that, they're plaster, they almost look like concrete. They're that smooth, a real smooth concrete. But it's usually this day and age, since most plaster walls are very old, because they're not, a lot of times, you know, people haven't plastered their walls recently. And then a lot of times they have a texture on it because someone has come along over the years and rolled on with a heavy nap brush. Roller, I should say. So anyway, so yeah, that's the difference in the naps. What other products are there to put paint on the walls?
Well, you got, like I mentioned, you got power rollers and you've got power, you've got the paint sticks. So I've not used the power rollers. I have used the paint sticks, and it's a double-edged sword. I think they're great if you're going to do a lot of painting at one time with one color.
Priming, too, if you have 2,000 square feet of priming to do or something.
Right. They're great for something like that. Their downfall, there's two. One is the primary downfall for me, and that is they take a very, very long time to clean and maintain. Because you've got to take the thing apart, you've got paint inside the handle, you've got paint inside a little tube, paint inside the roller. They take a special roller, and it's a real pain in the neck. So you might take a half an hour to clean the thing. And if you're only painting one wall, you could do it with a regular roller, be in, out, done, and cleaned up in the amount of time it would take just to clean a paint stick. And I would imagine the power rollers are the same, if not worse.
Right. And, you know, from my experience, I found that we talked in the last show about brushes, getting the best brush and how to clean them. And I found using the right tool, it's very easy to clean brushes. However, I've never really found an easy way to clean a roller. Is there such a thing?
You know, there's a tool. It's often called a 5-in-1 tool or a 6-in-1 right. tool, depending on what it is. And it's like a little scraper slash...
has a profile of on the one side of the tool. It's like a scraper on one side. On the other side, it has the profile of a roller.
Right. Yeah. So the idea is, as you're washing that, you can use that profile and squeegee across the roller to get the extra paint out as you're washing it. And that speeds the process up a little bit.
That's a good tip. Or you could do what I do. Get the cheapest rollers and throw them away when I'm finished.
Yeah.
Or... even better, I try to paint all at once, and if you can reuse the rollers without cleaning them, if you wrap them in like Saran wrap, and they'll stay wet overnight, and you can continue using them the next day.
Yeah, that's a great tip. The problem with the cheapest of the cheap rollers is they can leave fuzz on your wall, and that's a big pain in the neck. So you know, you get the three pack for 99 cents at Wally World. Yeah, then they're gonna. It's not going to be so great.
All right. Are there any other tools we should consider when painting the interior walls?
The pros are going to spray sometimes if they're doing a whole house. But quite frankly, when they spray, they got another guy that comes back behind them with a roller.
Right. So typically, you're going to be looking at rollers. That's really the tried and true method for getting paint on the walls.
All right. Let's talk about more fun stuff. Let's talk about... power tools.
All right, we're going to be talking about power tools, and it's going to be typical for us on our show to talk about or review a power tool on nearly every show, or a hand tool, as the case may be. But before we get to talking about reciprocating saws, which is our topic for this show, we want to let everyone know that if you want to see the tools that we're talking about, particularly the ones we really like, our top tools, to go to the Handy Guys Podcast store, and you'll find that on our site at Handy Guys Podcast. There'll be a link, I believe it'll be a tab at the top of the page where you'll see our Handy Guys Podcast store, and check out some of the tools we're recommending. You can go ahead and purchase them right on that website. So let's talk about reciprocating saws, Brian. When would you use a reciprocating saw?
Well, first of all, yeah, when and what is a reciprocating saw?
Good point. What is a reciprocating saw?
So typically a reciprocating saw is a, how do you describe it? It's a saw that has a blade that moves in and out. It makes very rough cuts. It's used for demolition quite often. It's used for cutting steel, used for cutting wood, wood with nails. Can be used to cut a lot of things, but you're not going to do fine woodworking with a reciprocating saw.
And Right. And sometimes people also call the reciprocating saw a sawzall. Why is that?
They call it a sawzall because a sawzall is a trade name of a company called Milwaukee. I'm not sure if they were the first company out with the sawzall. I'm pretty sure they were.
Yeah, I actually read that they introduced the sawzall back in the 1950s.
Right. And it's the de facto standard for reciprocating saws, just like, Q-tips, right, or Kleenexes are trade names for those particular products. Band-Aids is another example. Sawzall is Milwaukee's answer to that tool category.
Okay, so we actually have two Sawzalls that we really like. One is cordless and one is wired, requires power. And why don't you tell us a little bit about these two Sawzalls, how they differ, how they're alike, why you would use one over the other?
Sure. Well, the corded Milwaukee Sawzall I've had in my tool arsenal for many, many years. It's an 8-amp model. I'm not sure the exact model number. We'll have a link up in the show notes. And it's a workhorse. It takes a lot of abuse.
It's a tank.
It is a tank. It's heavy, but it's designed to not fail. It's a really professionally oriented type tool. You see them used all the time on these home shows when they're doing demolition, cutting through studs and 2x4s and other things. I've even heard of people using them for pruning trees. There's a wide variety of blades, short blades, long blades, blades for doing finer cuts in metal, really aggressive blades. My favorite blade is made by Milwaukee, and it's called the Axe. That's what they say. That's what it's labeled.
Well,
and that blade will cut pretty much anything.
Is this a dangerous tool?
Yeah, any tool that has a motor in it can be dangerous, yes. I don't think I've ever injured myself with that particular tool, although I have injured myself many a time, but not with the Sawzall. So you need to be careful, two hands, and let it rip.
And obviously you want to protect your eyes and ears whenever you're using a power tool. So, okay. Well, you have two. You mentioned the corded one. And what about the cordless?
Cordless one is a new addition. I picked up, actually got for Christmas, a Makita cordless reciprocating saw. I'm not going to call it a sawzall. It uses their new lithium ion battery technology. I picked it up or put it on my wish list for Christmas because I had already had a couple other Makita tools that used the lithium ion battery technology, and I was very, very impressed with them. So having a power tool such as this without a cord gives you a great deal of flexibility, especially if you're working on something where, you don't have electricity maybe, or the electricity's off, such as in a demolition situation, if you're tearing down a house or something like that. So you have a great deal of, mobility with the tool. So what Paul and I decided to do was to do a head-to-head comparison to see how the cordless compares to the corded from a performance perspective.
So let's go on location to Brian's garage for this test.
Okay, here we are on location in my garage. This is Brian, one of the handy guys, with Paul. And we're going to do a side-by-side speed test of two reciprocating saws. We want to see the performance difference between a battery operated reciprocating saw, the Makita LXT, which is their top of the line battery operated reciprocating saw, and probably one of the best battery operated ones on the market.
Okay, now Brian, are we going to start cutting through the studs in your garage wall here?
Just to set the scene for everybody, we've got a 2x4 set up in a Black & Decker Workmate. We've nailed two nails into each end, and we're going to do some timed cuts using a brand new reciprocating blade made by Milwaukee. The type of blade is called the Axe, and we're going to run the battery-operated LXT Makita reciprocating saw against the Milwaukee Sawzall.
All right.
It's an older model. It's an 8-amp version, running at 2,800 RPM. the Makita. Who knows how fast that runs? We can probably look that up and post that on the website if that's important. Probably runs a little slower. But again, two brand new blades. We're going to cut with a demolition blade through a 2x4 with two 16-penny nails embedded in it.
All right.
And I'll go with the corded one first. Paul will go with the battery first. We'll make two cuts, then we'll switch and make the cuts again, and we'll see which one wins.
Well, let's let her rip.
We're going to have some pictures on the website of the results as well.
All right, keep the children back.
All right. We have our eyes and ears on?
Yep.
All right, on the count of three. One, two, three, go.
I'm done.
All right, so Paul completed his cut in about twice as fast as me. I only got about half of the way through a 2x4 with two nails. I don't know how fast that is. Maybe we can time it as we're doing our post-production on this podcast.
Well, I went right through it, so I think...
You might have been pressing harder than I was, so I think we better switch and try it again.
Okay, let's try again. All right, you take the wired one. I'll go with the this battery-operated Makita, and we'll see if technique makes a difference. Let's do it.
All right.
One, two, three. Yeah, this thing was grinding up. I wasn't even cutting half the time.
I think I gave you a head start on that one, too.
All right, well, we'll discuss this further.
All right, so we're going to shut off and... you're dropping my new reciprocating saw. Thanks a lot.
Okay, we're back in the studio now, and we completed our test. And what did you think, Brian?
I was a little disappointed in the performance of the Makita, quite frankly. I think it was probably an okay investment...
Gift.
But it's, I'm sure I'll put it to good use someday. But the first tool, if electricity is available, I'm going to reach for the corded one without a doubt.
Perhaps that's a candidate for regifting that tool.
No, you're not getting it.
Maybe I should take that tool with me tonight.
Yeah, no.
Okay, well, so it was obvious that the powered saw was... performed much better. It wasn't even close. And I kind of thought that would be the case, but I was a little surprised that it was so much better.
Yeah, I was too. The Makita bound up in the cut and actually stopped cutting at one point. Maybe technique would have allow it to not bind up by not pressing into the wood quite as much, letting the tool do the work, as they say. On the other hand, the Milwaukee just cut that 2x4 and those two nails like butter.
Now, I've used the Milwaukee Sawzall, and it is an awesome tool. There's some other good reciprocating saws out there, but the most folks will point you toward the Milwaukee Sawzall when they're talking reciprocating saws. It seems to be the best.
Right. There's one other that I hear mentioned by people that own it, and that's the Porter Cable. It's called the Tiger Saw,
right?
Which is another reciprocating saw that is very well received by the people that own it. Maybe they have a little bit of tool envy and want to stand behind their tools. I don't know, but I've never used one of those. But
you can't go wrong with a Sawzall. And one thing I've also noticed is that your Sawzall, it's not super old. What is it, about 10 years old or so?
It's about 10, maybe 15
years
old. It's
extremely heavy, I will say. However, it just works well. You can use that weight to your advantage when you're working with it.
Right. And one nice thing with reciprocating saws in general is you can put really long blades on it. So let's say you're replacing a window in a 6-inch wall. You can cut all the way through interior studs, exterior siding, and everything all with one cut if you so desired with the long blades.
So that's enough about reciprocating saws in this show. And before we finish our show, I wanted to talk about where you might find tools, where the best places are to go, at least, to find tools on the internet. So whether it be reciprocating saws or if you need some other power tools or even hand tools, where might I go?
Well, Amazon, of course, has some phenomenal deals. They've got free shipping sometimes. They have sales. You can really often find some great deals at Amazon on tools. They're not just a bookstore. But there's other companies, too, that have pretty nice online presence and a little bit better customer service than you might find with Amazon. Depending on what kind of tool you're looking for. At the last show, I mentioned a company named Rockler. They're going to have hardware and tools, more hand tools. They sell routers and different things like that. Their customer service is top-notch. Lee Valley is another company for hand tools that is renowned for their customer service. What else? Craigslist. You can, if you're looking for used, Craigslist is a good option, and eBay. You can often find deals there.
One other place I would recommend is the Handy Guys podcast store, where we will have some of the what we think are the best tools in their categories listed for you. So you can find them easily. They'll link through Amazon, which I've had great success with Amazon. I think their customer service is good. Their shipping is good. They have great prices. And the thing with Amazon is it's their breadth of information. They have a lot of tools, and it's easy to find things. That's what I really like about it.
Yep. And one other very small resource, but that I've found very very helpful from time to time is a an online forum called WoodNet. There's actually a swap and sell section there where people will put up tools that they want to sell, or put up notices of things they want to buy, and you can sometimes get some great deals from some good guys there that are into woodworking.
Okay, well, that's all for this show. If you'd like to contact us or ask us any questions, please go to our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com. Until next time.
We're the Handy Guys.
And we're here to help you with that honey-do list.
That's right.
See ya.